passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Been too long as we say hello to you on the program for the second hour since we've talked to Dave Bartu. Who is he? He's a managing partner at Matrix Analytical Solutions. Dave, thank you very, very much. As we say hello to you, I want to make sure you remind people exactly how you do it, because you break down college football and other things really in the most unique and successful way. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I guess ultimately the 20,000 foot view of what we do is we tell stories with numbers. That's really it. Now, our focus, we've been building staffs with coaching analytics for the last 3 years in college football and the NFL, and that's our main focus when we're working with administrators and head coaches is staff building, because we have the largest library of graded coaches in the country. Going back to 2010, but we also like to dabble in data, including playoff committee behavior, going forward on fourth down, things like that. We like to be a devil's advocate when it comes down to the data for our coaches.
Well, Dave, you know what neighborhood you're in here in the SEC, so let's start mm-hmm. there with SEC coaches and tell us what you've learned in terms of achievers, overachievers, and then underachievers.
Well, are we talking about careers or this year? Because
let's talk about where we are right now in time.
Right. You know, and because I put out a tweet last night, I was going through our very basic numbers, because to us, college football is simply three parts: recruiting, coaching, and where the game is played. Okay. And everybody knows the recruiting part. We focus on the coaching part. And in our simplest way of breaking down coaching performance this year in the SEC, the number one head coach in the SEC is plus three games, meaning their team has won three games beyond talent expectations. And right now, if there was a vote for SEC coach of the year at plus three games, the next closest one is plus one game. So he's doing an excellent job with his talent to the schedule. I'm voting for Lane Kiffin as SEC coach of the year today.
Wow, that is interesting, because some of what, and I don't know how this shows up in the numbers, but some of his success, based on what you are saying, is also predicated on the November slide of him last year when literally the bottom fell out after a very successful season. Do you factor that in, or is it just numbers?
It's just numbers. I mean, look, the slide was real last year. November was poor for Ole Miss, and we're just getting into it. But, you know, if we're talking about what they've done, body of work this year, I don't really care so much what's happened before. We can talk about it because he's had excellent years, but, you know, relative to the rest of the SEC, because nobody else in the SEC has stepped up beyond their schedule, save Eli at Missouri, who's plus one game in our system. Lane has just done a really, really good job with the schedule, the talent he has, and also building his staff, which was top 25 in our rankings coming into the season.
Let's broaden this scope a little bit. And I want you to look at the antithesis of what we just got through talking about, those who are underperforming, because that's a big part of November, is what are coaches doing? Why aren't they doing it? And what did you find?
Well, I think when you're looking at SEC coaches right now in terms of underperforming, we have to go to College Station, man. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I just talked about Lane being plus three games. In the last 2 years, Jimbo is minus nine. And to give you some perspective,
minus nine? What does that mean?
Okay, exactly. Let me give you some perspective. The next worst head coach in the Power Five is at minus six games in this scale, okay? And there's five of them. And so this will give you some immediate perspective of how far A&M is underperforming its talent over the last 2 years, in spite of having an absolutely excellent staff 2 through 11. The teams at minus six are Stanford, Virginia Tech, Michigan State, okay? and so you have those teams at minus six games. You have Wisconsin at minus six games. You know, their head coach was fired last year. Michigan State's losing theirs this year. Stanford fired theirs last year. So those are the second worst group of performing teams relative to the recruited talent. Look, A&M came in this year. They were the fourth best high school recruiter in the college football over the last 4 years. Okay, the teams in front of them are Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia. They are combined, all three teams combined, are zero games coach effect. They are dead even on where they should be with their talent, and A&M's at -9. It's not just the SEC. This is a Power 5 over the last 2 years. A&M has underperformed the talent more than anybody.
So, okay, the -9, I know you explained it, but I'm so intrigued by that number because it is a telltale sign. It's not just a trend line. I mean, what is it telling you, and why?
So two things. One, comparables. Okay, this is like Scott Frost at Nebraska. This is like Mack Brown at Texas after the national title runs. Okay, just to give you a perspective of other guys that are in the -9. Remember back to Ed Orgeron at Ole Miss?
Sure.
If you remember how bad that was -12 in 3 years. Mm. So, and the easiest way, Paul, to calculate this is simply everybody follows recruiting. Just whoever the better recruiter is, pick them to win the game. And if you lose that game, that's a minus coach effect. You out-recruited the team, and you got beat because you got out-coached. That's the simplest way of calculating
coach
effect.
So last Saturday, we did our show from Oxford, and you had a guy in Lane Kiffin, you've already mentioned him, who – mm-hmm. who's done well in the portal, who recruits well, but comparatively to Jimbo Fisher, we're not talking about the same type of program, are we?
No, we're not. We're talking about the number 22 recruiter over the last 4 years in Ole Miss going up against the number 4 recruiter at Texas A&M. Now, that's on the road, so we do have a little bit of play.
But it was also
home versus
the third
road.
Straight win by Lane Kiffin over Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, that was coaching. He out-coached him, right? He didn't out-talent them. He outcoached him, and Jimbo has a really good staff. So does Lane. But the bottom line is, in our numbers, that is a +1 game coach effect. Lane outcoached with his staff, outcoached A&M and their recruiting. That's why they got a +1. That's why Jimbo got another -1 for that game.
Okay, I could speak to you for the next 3 hours on that one thing, but I don't want to hog all the time because we are, although it doesn't seem like it, just 3 hours away from the CFP reveal. It's changed, and I mean, because I think we all know we're going to get a lot of double talk tonight, and then next week we'll get it again, and then finally we'll find out what it's all about. But you know, you are one of the premier people when it comes to analyzing this stuff, if not the best. How are you looking at it right now before we watch the show tonight?
The thing that bothers me the most with the playoff committee is Bill Hancock said we'd have transparency, and we haven't.
No.
We get word salad every time it comes out, right? Now, what Bill Hancock did give us is the formula on how it's ranked, and the playoff committee has been remarkably consistent. We created one formula 9 years ago, and every final top 10 we have nailed in order using the same formula, 7 variables, no eye test. I don't even believe in the eye test because none of these people are really qualified to do it from that standpoint. So what we're going to get tonight is, in fact, the model says what we had last week will not change. Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, Florida State, Washington. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That is exactly what the model has right now for tonight. So I don't think there's going to be any movement. In fact, in the top 10, the only thing that's going to be tweaked is the playoff committee darling Oregon, who has beaten one team with a record above 500, is probably still going to be at 6. We have them modeled at 8. Everything else will just stay in order. So I don't think you're going to see really any movement other than Oregon being slightly out of place at 6 instead of 8. Everything else is going to be status quo in the top 10.
Now, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here, but can you project out? Because there's a really interesting dilemma coming up, and mm-hmm. none of these things ever come true, but there are a lot of Alabama fans that are very nervous that, you know, if you get a couple of undefeated teams and then Texas beats whatever opponent they get in the Big 12 championship game, that Alabama could get left out, even beating Georgia in the SEC game.
Oh, man, what ifing on a show 4 weeks in advance. Killing me. But look, the thing that it comes down to, and this is for all fans out there, is there's only seven variables: strength of schedule, quality wins, top 25 wins, and margin of victory. Okay, so what Alabama needs to do, they're going to get the top 25 wins. I think they're going to be there. What I would be concerned with is Alabama's margin of victory right now. It's behind Ohio State. It's behind Michigan. It's behind Florida State. It's behind Texas. So if I'm an Alabama fan, obviously we need to win out, but we need to start winning bigger. Okay, I don't care if they're up 50. I want them to be up 60. If you're a Bama fan, foot on the gas all the way to the end. Hopefully you win them all. But your biggest detriment right now is lack of quote-unquote game control, which is just essentially a glorified margin of victory, Paul.
So, but it could come down to head-to-head, which is has to be an indicator, is it not?
It'll be the last thing they consider. Bill Hancock, when he came out with everything, everybody thinks head-to-head and strength of schedule is important. In fact, it's the last two things they consider. That's okay. How they sort things out. So if it's Texas-Alabama, all things equal, top 25 wins, quality wins, conference championships. If those are all equal, then they'll go head to head. But it is not a priority until everything else is equal on the board.
Amazing. Dave, this has been a treat. We must do this again. Thank you so much for dropping by.
Anytime. Thank you.
That was, I don't know, maybe I'm just a numbers geek, but I found that to be enthralling. We will take a break. You did? You didn't?
Yeah.
I did. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back as we continue. It's really great to have everyone here. We'll talk to one of the bright players in the SEC coming up here in a minute from the University of Tennessee. Stacy is up next.
Now, don't station me. Don't station me from no Birmingham. Let me tell you something, Paul. Let me tell you something. You got one more time, and Randy got one more time to keep me on hold while old idiot Jim come on ain't talking about nothing. Jim done called twice already. Don't you be keeping me on the hold while Jim called in acting a fool. And I told you some while back that JK is for me. You leave JK for me. But I'm glad Jerome got on JK yesterday, and Jerome said nothing but the truth, but JK belonged to me. Paul, I'm always taking up for you, Paul, but you got one more time to keep me on hold like that, Paul, and I'm coming in for you real good, Paul, I'm telling you. Now, what I wanted to talk about and what I wanted to ask you is in reference to JK. He having a hard time this year, Paul. He can't win at nothing. Do you agree about that, Paul?
Well, first of all, how are you going to handle JK?
Well, I told you when J.K. called in, I told you that I wanted a piece of J.K. But you gave Jerome the opportunity to get at J.K., which I'm okay with that, Paul, because Jerome handled business. But I wanted a piece of J.K. for running his mouth about the Tide, and I wanted a piece of J.K. for talking crazy to you.
You may be mad at me, but I'm still going to be your friend. I don't think you really want.
Yeah, you're going to be my friend, Paul. You're going to always be my friend, but Paul, I got to check you when you're wrong, Paul.
I'm trying to give you some really good advice here. I don't think you really want to
give me some advice.
I don't think you want a piece of JK.
I do want a piece of JK. I do want a piece of JK.
Everybody wants a piece of somebody until they're faced with trying to get a piece of them.
Let me tell you something, Paul. Let me tell you. I try to call this show, Paul. I try to be civil. I try to be nice, Paul. But you want you know what? You don't like silver, Paul. You want a fool. You want a fool, and I will act a fool, Paul.
Stacey, I have to stop you right there.
Okay, stop me. What you got to say?
Not that you're wrong. I just don't want anybody else to know that, okay?
Well, I'm just telling you, Paul, I will act a fool, okay? I will act a fool. I'm telling you, Paul. Paul, I'm mad at you about
the fool.
Go ahead, Paul.
That song. Remember that one?
Say what now? Say what, Paul? I can't hear you.
Yeah, that was a good song.
What song are you talking about, Paul?
Everybody plays the fool.
Yeah, everybody plays fool, but I ain't going to play the fool. I'm going to be the fool. So keep on playing with me, Paul. But, Paul, let me say this before I get out of here. I asked you a question.
That was 1972. Stacey.
Say what, Paul?
That was 1972. That was probably before your time.
I don't care if it's 1955. I will be a fool if you keep on pushing me, Paul. Paul, I got a question for you. Can you answer my question?
Sometimes.
Can you answer my question?
Listen, baby. Are you still there?
Paul Feinbaum. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Well, spit it out.
I need you to answer my question. Has JK ever worn anything?
Yeah, he has.
What?
And playing the fool.
Yeah, well, he won at that, but he ain't winning in football games,
no.
And he didn't win the argument yesterday. You should have put in the sounds effect. Boom, 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 because Jerome was killing him.
Yeah, Jerome was pummeling him, I agree. Yeah.
He couldn't say nothing. It's like, you know, your parents tell you when they fussing at you, you better not say a word back to me. He couldn't say anything.
Well, I think that your advantage, Stacey, is Jerome may have softened J.K. up for you.
Well, that's okay. Let me get a piece of them. When I get them, it's all over, Paul. But before I get out of here, Paul, can I get a Roll Tide?
Roll Tide.
All right, Paul.
Okay, Stacey. Next time I see your name, you go ahead of everybody. Sorry about that.
Don't make that mistake no more, Paul.
I don't need you mad at me.
Don't you make that mistake no more, Paul.
No, sir. I'm no, no mas. Kelly is on Long Island. Hello, Kelly.
Yes, I'm here to be the voice of reason, Paul. I'm
Please.
Sorry for your pummeling from Stacey.
Thank you.
But LSU's chances at a New Year's Six. When do you think
they're done?
Okay, yeah, answer that.
Jerome may have softened J.K. up.
What do you think?
I think if they win out, they'll be 9-3. They'll be in a good position.
Well, before I get out,
okay.
Can I get up?
Yeah, it is a big question though if they can win out.
Well, I think they'll win out.
You think so?
Yes, sir.
Right,
yes, ma'am.
Their
Florida and A&M.
Yeah, but Texas A&M is a weird team.
Yeah,
they stink, but sometimes they come up with it.
Well, they do.
So,
I mean, I think Texas A&M is a good team that is poorly managed.
Yeah, they need a better coach, obviously. And I think you're right that in your article that Jimbo is on a thin line right now. But also, the Pac-12 is now like a two-horse race. Who do you see winning, Washington or Oregon?
I like Oregon.
Do you?
Yes.
You don't think Washington has the metal to stay where they are?
I think Washington's defense showed Saturday how susceptible they are. And let's not forget, had Dan Lanning not completely gone temporary insane, I think Oregon would have beaten them in Seattle. Hey, thanks so much for the call. Bob is up next. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul, how are you, bud?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about ESPN. Saturday used to be a great day, great morning, getting ready to watch College Game Day. And I always thought it was a little bit of a well-done class act show. But this new guy they've got on there is really pretty rude and crude. And you know, we'd watched him a little bit last year at the national championship game. He acted like he was really sort of out of it. And this last Saturday, he's on the show, and he manages to use every appropriate curse word that we could come across, either by inference or directly. And he stands up in the middle of the show and takes his shirt off. So I don't know what's going on with ESPN, but I think that's pretty sad, and I hate to see that occurring.
Well, Bob, that has been the front door to college football for 30 years, and I'm not giving you a corporate answer because, frankly, I'm at a point in my career where I don't feel like that's what I need to do. And I've heard that from other people. I have not seen the show this year, because we're doing another show, but I've heard enough people complain. And I, you know, when you're an employee at a company, and I'm sure you've been there before, you worry about what you can control, not what other people can. And
well,
that may not be a satisfactory answer, but I'm not disagreeing with you because I don't really know for sure, but I am a big believer in when you're on a public forum to consider many, many things, but mainly to consider that there are young people watching who are very impressionable, and I try very hard not to ever go down a road where I'm using crude language. I don't believe I ever have, and if one slips out, then I'll apologize in advance, but I don't think that's the proper way to go.
Well, you guys have always done real well. It's been enjoyable watching all your coverage, over the years. And sadly, I just don't look forward to Saturday game day anymore.
Bob, I completely understand. And by the way, you are not in the you are not in a singular boat. There's been a lot of conversation written and spoken about that issue, but it's pretty apparent that everybody feels good about where that program is. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Jalen Wright, running back from the University of Tennessee, will be joining us in mere moments, and we can't wait.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back, and we are delighted to head right now to Rocky Top, Knoxville, Tennessee, where Jalen Wright joins us. What a day he had Saturday. Just a truly a stunning performance, 113 yards, one huge run, a touchdown. He's just continued doing what he's been doing all year. Jalen, thank you very, very much. Congratulations on the season. I know you guys have a big one this Saturday. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So let's just pause for a second as your team heads to Columbia, Missouri for a nationally televised huge matchup, and then you have Georgia the week after. How would you describe these first 10 weeks of the season so far?
I just feel like, man, we just been going by, taking every game week by week. I feel like we've been trying to keep the main thing, staying consistent in all our habits. I feel like we got a big 2 weeks ahead of us, big teams that we're getting ready to play, good teams. So I'm just excited to get after it.
Yeah, and I know, and for those who don't know the schedule, you're at Missouri this week, a number 12 team in the country. Next week, Georgia, they may be number one. They are number one in a couple of polls. And I know coaches don't ever like players to think about what's ahead or people like me to ask players. So we'll concentrate on Missouri for a moment. What do you know about them?
Missouri, man, they've been having a good season so far, and they've been playing with their hair on fire. We know that they're going to come out, bring their energy. They're going to come out playing hard, so we got to go out there and match their energy and get the dub.
Jalen, I know every year is different, but in seeing Tennessee a couple of times this year down at Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago, being up in Knoxville for the A&M game, it's a completely different approach than what this team had a year ago with Hendon Hooker and so many great wide receivers. How would you describe the difference, and what's it been like playing in a different concept under Josh Heupel?
Just been different. We had a lot of big playmakers on our team last year. Jalen Hyatt, Hendon Hooker, Cedric Tillman. Those are a lot of big parts that we lost. But, this year I feel like as a team we had to learn how to come together and play with each other. So that's why I feel like we've been doing a good job at this year.
And I know it always starts up front, but the offensive line has been fantastic. That's something that's taken a while to build in this offense. How much do you lean on those big guys up front?
Man, words can't explain, man. I'm so proud of them. Ever since we got Cooper Mays back, he's the leader, the center, the leader of our O-line. They've come together ever since he come back. They've been doing a good job at sustaining blocks, creating a new line of scrimmage, just opening seams to help us running backs get through and make big plays.
Jalen, I know quarterbacks and running backs always look to the guys up front, but what's it like off the field when you guys are relaxing after a game or during some downtime? There has to be a connection between where you are and what those guys are doing? What's it like?
You know, we're just trying to just stay consistent with what we're doing, taking care of our bodies. When we're not playing football, and we're just trying to take advantage of all time, just resting. I think that's a really big part of being an athlete. Getting a good amount of rest that you need, and just studying on your next opponent.
On Saturday, I think if my memory is correct, you guys had the early game, and then your next opponent, Missouri, and the opponent after that, Georgia, were playing in Athens in the late afternoon game. I know there's a lot of things that happen right after a game, but do you guys try to get away and then try to watch the game? You know you're going to see it on film all week, but in terms of how it played out, did you get a chance to see any of it?
Yeah, that was a good benefit of last week of playing early. After the game, I went straight home and I was just seeing the game, watching Georgia, Missouri, all the big primetime games, just watching football. That's just not something I get to do often, having an early game and having a lot of time to myself.
I was talking to a coach the other day, and coaches watch the game from a different perspective, but as a player, as a running back, are you fixating on both Georgia's defensive line and Missouri's defensive line, just kind of taking mental notes for what will happen the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, definitely, man. That's all I was really watching, watching their D-line, watching how fast they get off the ball, watching the backers, how fast they flow and how they react to certain runs, certain plays.
That would have upset me because they both have great defensive lines. How did you react?
Yeah. They both got great defensive lines. My big thing, we just got to win the line of scrimmage. That's offense and defense. Win the line of scrimmage and, everything will take care of itself.
As you reflect on this season, it hasn't been completely different than last year, except you did have to go to Alabama. And of course, the Florida game was in Gainesville. Fans get hung up on what's already happened, but as a player, do you just turn the page regardless of whether it was a great game or not? Because you do have to prepare. It's like schoolwork. You can't, or can you allow what's previously happened get in your way?
Yeah, we can't let the past, affect the present. We try to leave, take one game at a time, win or lose, that's in the past. We got other stuff we got to get ready for, bigger teams we got to play, bigger games. So we try to keep, what happens in the past, not think about those.
Jalen, before you go, I want to talk a little bit about just being at the University of Tennessee, playing in Neyland Stadium and the proud tradition. It means a lot to so many fans. As all you have to do is look up in the upper deck and the end zones all over Neyland Stadium. What's it mean to be a player in that stadium for such a proud tradition like Tennessee?
Man, it means a lot, man. Just to know all the greats that came before me that played in the same stadium, all the greats that went to the next level and is great in the next level, it just means a lot. Just to be a part of this tradition. We have passionate fans, man. I love our fans, man. I think we have the best fan base in the nation. It just means a lot to be a Vol, and I'm proud to be a part of.
Well, we're proud to have you, and can't wait for these next couple of games. I don't want to rush anything because Saturday is critically important for Tennessee and Missouri. Hope you have a great game, and we will see you soon. Thanks so much for making time.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Jalen Reith, the running back from the University of Tennessee, joining us from Knoxville. We'll take a short break. We are back right after.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back, and Jim is up next.
Paul, I applaud and I suck at the motion by Bob from Florida on what he said about game day. Let me say this about it. I don't like the show, never have liked the show. But Saturday, since it was in Alabama, I wanted to see what they did. And that guy's a fool, McAfee, he came off with his shirt sitting right next to Coach Saban. And he's just a derogatory. Look, you know what, Paul? This is the thing about your show. On your show, unlike anywhere I know of in America, a person can come on, a dignified, decent person can come on, and even many fools can get the floor on your show. We know that, and that's what's good about – that's the best thing. That's the best thing about your show. But that's outrageous to have that. ESPN is losing credibility as fast as Joe Biden. That's all I can tell you.
That fast,
it's
huh?
horrible. Huh?
I said, that fast, huh?
And I want to say this to you, Paul. You should never take offense when somebody comes on like Bob, because that's not directed at you. But it's only because you're the only one that will give a platform to have somebody like him have the floor to make a sapient point as he did. That's what, and it's great.
Well,
his point.
Yeah,
was,
I tried to explain it, and I think by now, I mean, I know I get accused. I mean, my job is not. I don't. I'm not in public relations at the company. I have a talk show.
You don't have to be. All you have to do is you're doing great by just taking a person's phone call like you did Bob, like you do mine. Even like you do the food.
I mean, there are many, many people who like him, including obviously the management at the company. Nick Saban, apparently.
Yeah, you know why, Paul? You know why? Because we're in a time where fools are getting, like on your show, fools are getting exposure. And there's fools out there. Look, Paul, fools breed fools. That's simple as that. I'm serious. You know, I've always said that. And you know that.
Well, I think in the today's current media world, where boring doesn't play very well, you do have to be eccentric. You have to be outside the box.
Like me.
Well, yeah, I think you pretty much have been a trailblazer in that.
I think so.
I mean, when you go
and
back,
I'm trying to do it now.
If you think callers are lame now, you should have. Well, you did hear them 20 years ago.
too many of them. But I still never liked a jerk callers, and that's what's wrong with this country now. I really believe that. I mean, I know that. We got scumbags making points and getting allowed to make the points. And, you know, many times, like you used to do, you'd cut off a scumbag and move on. Now, because of your show being on ESPN, you tend to go on with and love.
Because
I really believe
it's a little different. Back then, Jim, as you know, I was a big part of the show.
You were the main part of the show.
Now I'm just a guy who punches the buttons.
No, you shouldn't take it that way, Paul. You get more input. You actually do far more input now than you used to on the old show. You used to just say, let's go to Jim,
well,
let's go to Shane.
I think if you go back to the first iteration, it was really me versus the caller, and then I changed it after you came along. I didn't need to do it anymore. You did it. It was all about you. And then but it's just everything evolves, Jim. You know that.
Yeah, I know that, but sometimes it evolves in the wrong direction.
Well, that's very true.
All we can do, though, we need to pray for Israel. You know that, and I know you know that.
That's very accurate.
And I will say this, Paul. I think the sharpest man in the world right now, even above Trump, is Benjamin Netanyahu. And the pressure that man has on him, he's an articulate, well-schooled in America. And I've always tremendously admired him.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the call. Jay is up next in Charlotte. Good afternoon. Hey, Jay. Jay, are you there? How about no? Chris is up next. So, hey, Chris, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call today.
Thank you.
So a couple things. Real quick, and this, I just unvarnished opinion, right? I've been trying to comb the rule books for both targeting and roughing the passer, and I don't see that it reached the level of targeting. I didn't see that it reached the level, to be honest, I think it was marginal about whether it was roughing the passer, right? The rule for NFL, I know that's not what they're under, gives one step, right? He was definitely within a step before the ball came out. NCAA rules just say, you know, they've got to be aware that it's well gone, and it wasn't well gone when he made contact. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think because it's in that gray area, they didn't call it. And I, as I watched it, I didn't think it was targeting. I understand, and I'm not playing games here. I understand.
Yep.
People see things differently. You can get 10 people to watch the same thing, and they all see it a different way. And a lot of it depends on their emotions and
their
biases.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, not in this, in no way is like, oh, I'm glad he got hurt. Like, in fact, I'm quite in the camp that I want all their players full health so that when there's a win, there's no excuses and it doesn't tarnish the win later, especially for the, in the eyes of the committee, right? Like, oh, maybe it would have been different had he been healthy through the end of the game. But I, that was just my, I just wanted to get your unvarnished opinion. Yeah, you know, one thing I did see.
But I have, interestingly, I have talked to friends who really see it differently.
I can see people seeing it that way. Yeah, truthfully, I mean, I don't think you can take the bias out though. I was at Neyland Stadium, you know, when Bryce got targeted and it was like no flags. I mean, I know how we were reacting to it, right? But I guess my biggest thing on that is I think one thing I had seen is that from an officiating perspective, right? And I don't remember the source. But basically, I said if we can't clearly define it as targeting on the field, then they'll call roughing the passer, right? Because it'll be reviewed anyway, right? And at least that way, if it is, you know, if it is in a gray area or it seems like it's maybe excessive, there's something, right? Which was the way it was called, right? So
hey, thank you very much for the call. We head to the break. We have a busy final couple hours. Matt Stinchcomb will be by. We'll get Zim in here. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.